last-minute entries today into the Jacksonville mayor's race, including Anna Brochet. Speaking of elections, Amendment 4, restoring the right to vote for former felons, is now in effect. And today is day 21 of the partial government shutdown, how it is affecting our area. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live. We are live from Studio 5 here for First Coast Connect on 89.9. I'm Melissa Ross, and thanks for listening. Just ahead, all the biggest stories of the week with our Friday roundtable, and what a news week it is. Lots to talk about. You can get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, it's the beautiful music of the Songbook Showcase out at the beaches this weekend. That's coming up. But first this hour, it's Friday, and here to discuss a busy news week, we welcome Mark Woods of the Florida Times Union. Hey, Mark.
Good morning.
David Cotton of the Jags Daily Record is here.
Hello.
Blogger and regular contributor Fred Matthews. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning, Melissa.
And A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics.
Hello.
Good to have you guys here. Lots to discuss this week. Everything from former felons around town registering to vote. We'll also look at the impact of the government shutdown on the First Coast. And Ron DeSantis is sworn in as governor and already making changes for Florida. We'll get into that, too. But our top story this Friday, it is official. Today's the deadline for candidates running in the March city elections to file and run. Now, there have been a slew of last-minute filers. WJCT can confirm this morning that Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry, who is seeking re-election, will draw a high-profile challenger. It's former Jacksonville City Council President Anna Brochet. She filed this morning. Her campaign tells WJCT Brochet will run on three major issues. Inclusivity. We can expect Brochet to accuse Curry of running what she will say is a good old boys administration of mostly white men at City Hall, not including enough diverse voices in crucial decisions. Transparency, from the controversy over trying to privatize JEA to questionable board appointments to the mayor's political action committee. You can expect Brochet to try to make the case that city business has been conducted in an ethically questionable manner. And then finally, and probably most importantly for this campaign, the issue of public safety. Brochet will accuse Curry of failing to follow through on his campaign promise to deal with Jacksonville's scourge of violent crime. Now, for his part, we can certainly expect the mayor to go hard against Anna Brochet. He will accuse her of being a failed city council representative who grandstands for attention. And of course, the mayor has millions of dollars to spend and broad establishment support. The March election, it's hard to believe, is coming up in just 2 months. And here's the question. If Mayor Curry fails to break 50% of the votes, Brochet and some other candidates who have filed can try to force him into a May runoff election. The question, of course, is can they do it? We begin the hour with a closer look in your calls as we discuss the mayor's race. It's on. Let the games begin. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online. Send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, or weigh in on Facebook. Fred Matthews, you've been off the show for a little bit. Let's begin with you. Your thoughts.
This is going to be fun. It's going to be fun because, at least for us, it's going to be. And for those who are running for office, it's going to be a tense time. But we now have an official, as you've indicated there. It looks like Anna Brochet is going to be a candidate, and Garrett Dennis is going to be a candidate in his District 9 race, and protect his seat there, which he should do. But it will be interesting because we have a lot of dynamics here. We have in the mayor's race, we have the issue of women in politics. We have the issue of Republicans deciding to speak ill about another Republican. And we have Democrats who have to decide if how many of them are going to cross the line since they hold the majority of voters in Duval County. And we did such a marvelous job of swinging that to Andrew Gillum last fall. So the question is, how much of that's going to garner? And of course, how nasty is the mayor's team going to be?
Okay, A.G. Gankarski, your thoughts about that. As Fred pointed out, this is a top vote getter race. It's open to all parties. You've just got to break 50%. Can Brochet draw those moderates and liberals? Can Curry hold his base and expand it? How nasty is Curry expected to get against Brochet?
Well, it's going to be very nasty. I mean, Lenny Curry is not going to be doing it himself. His political committee's our operative, Tim Baker, who has all day now to formulate a response to Brochet filing. It's going to get ugly because they've dug into the oppo for the last year, and they're going to dig into everything regarding her personal life. It's going to be publicized in ways that you can't imagine. And that's really the challenge for Anna Brochet. She's got going up against an opponent with a well-honed machine. She's going to have endorsements from here to the county line and has $3 million, give or take, to spend. The people draw analogs between this race and Angela Corey, Melissa Nelson. But Melissa Nelson had twice the money Angela Corey did. Angela Corey had a lot of things in the media that were being used against her at the same time. It was a perfect storm there. Anna Brochet's got to run the campaign of her life. Her campaign team's got to run the campaign of its life because it's going to be an uphill slog. This is not as easy as some people might think it wants to be.
And only 2 months until the first election, as it's called, Mark Woods, David Cotton. It's going to be 2 months of intense campaigning, not just for these folks at the top of the ticket, but some other races as well.
Yeah, I think Fred has an interesting definition of fun. I'm not sure that would be what I'd use to describe the next 2 months because, you know, we had the mayor's PACs already running ads against Anna Brochet that were pretty hard hitting and nasty already before she had even filed. So if that's, you know, it's been kind of an unprecedented stretch of money fundraising in the last few years. And now to have it all pumped into a couple months, I don't know. I think I was going to say I'd go to a national park, but half of them are closed. So,
and we'll talk about that in a minute. yes, as Mark pointed out, David, certainly this mayor has been a marked departure from previous mayors in that he formed a political action committee. He's put really hard-charging political operatives around him in a way that previous mayors just honestly have not done. And so that will affect this contest significantly, and it will require Brochet to try to meet that in kind.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, you know, you got to think about what is the Curry administration going to hit Anna Brochet on? They're going to say, you stood up for removing Confederate statues, and then you didn't. You have voted for all of my budgets. You decided to embarrass the mayor in front of the entire city during a city council meeting. Things like this. I think when we talk about the tone of this election, I think Mark is right. That first, you know, quote unquote, the Jeopardy ad that came out a couple of weeks ago that is running on during every single local newscast on television.
Put up before she even filed.
Yeah, before she even filed. It is going to be interesting.
Which she would obviously say is a misleading ad, but
absolutely.
But most political ads tend to be that way.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Yeah. And let me ask you, Fred, about these themes. The campaign reached out to WJCT before the filing and said these are the themes she's going to hit the incumbent on. Of course, Mayor Curry will have to run on his record. The themes of inclusivity and transparency, you can expect a lot about that. But more importantly, I think to the average voter, the issue of crime and public safety, trying to gain purchase with this idea that there's been what the mayor's critics have been calling a Curry crime wave. That's the issue that you can expect to hear a lot about, I think.
Well, it becomes one of those issues of, you know, don't believe what you see, just believe what I say in terms of what the mayor's race is about. And yes, she does need to hit on those and those themes because crime is the big issue. Now, to the mayor's credit, in many quarters, he has reached out in many areas. Let's not forget the hugging and, of course, the things that went on over at Eureka Gardens, where he stepped in along with the fire marshal and made a big show of getting that done. And despite and we don't know all of the behind-the-scenes activity that went place in getting an ownership change, being involved in ownership change with those with the Washington Heights and all of those things on the north side. And yes, the big thing. Is yes, crime has increased in his 2 years, despite the fact that he vowed to get it down. Despite the fact he's increased funding to police and fire, and despite the fact he's changed over the Children's Commission and all of that to make other committees all in his image to help to fight this issue, nothing has changed. And that will be something to see how well she's going to deal with that. But the other part of it, you know, she's just going to have to be tough, and she's going to have to stand out. And I, up to this point, I have not seen that kind of toughness, at least politically. Again, I remember this is just her second major political race on a state, well, on a citywide level. I have not seen that public political toughness that I think is going to be required for this race.
Well, you know, it's evaluating somebody's toughness, I think, is a tough thing to do. But here's what we can look at. We can look at the respective political operations, because that's going to be the toughness that people see. Brochet apparently has already lost one consultant, Anthony Pedicini. Reports from Tallahassee are that he had to basically withdraw from that position because the Republican establishment came down on him for working against an incumbent in good standing. I mean, Lenny Curry was all over the place during the inaugural with Ron DeSantis. What that tells me is he has complete buy-in from the state architecture. Anna Brochet is running as a bootleg Democrat. There's no serious Democrat in the race. The Democratic establishment is going to somehow cross party lines, back Brochet. I don't know how that's going to play with the state party. There are a lot of things here. And regarding the issues that Brochet is running on, public safety, I mean, Curry's devoted resources to public safety, more cops, Kids Hope Alliance, et cetera. You can argue about whether those things have worked yet, but their cases can be that it is working. Inclusivity, transparency, I mean, these are questions, but, you know, it goes both ways. And, you know, if you're just saying it's not inclusive enough, it's not transparent enough, and people are happy with the results, this is Jacksonville. We respond to marketing here. We are the city of low information and medium information voters that decide elections, and the best marketer will win, and it'll probably be Lenny Curry.
I was going to say, with Anna Brochet, her biggest problem is name recognition. I mean, most people in Jacksonville that don't follow politics probably don't have a problem with the job that Lenny Curry is doing right now. And so Anna Brochet's, I guess, goal over the next 2 months here is to introduce herself to the rest of Jacksonville.
And that's right. It's a tight time frame. We're talking about a 2 month campaign here. If only all campaigns were that long. Yeah. Couldn't we make that a change for everything, including presidential elections? Okay. Lots of calls as we discuss the Jacksonville mayor's race. It's a real race now. We are talking about the Lenny Curry Anna Brochet matchup. 549-2937, and John is on the south side. Hi, John. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you so much for taking my call, and good morning to your distinguished panel. You know, we have to remember, Jax, it's been easier here.
Supposedly, yeah.
Well, as far as the race, what I hope, and AG, I hope you'll chime in on this one, but we had that task force on open government, but there is active legislation 2018-19 that will restrict free speech, and I think that's a huge one. That'll be before rules, and during a break, just take a look at it, and I'd welcome, you know, what your thoughts and
sure.
I
appreciate that call.
Bill, so.
And you know, that's coming up in the. Let's mention that just briefly. You can expect Curry's challenger to say that City Hall has not practiced open government; that it hasn't been transparent. And so, I guess the question that matters is, will that gain traction with voters? Do they care about that? AG, you, as you said a minute ago, you don't think most of them do.
Well, I mean,
let me ask some of the other people real quick. Mark Woods.
Well, I think, you know, probably the mayor's, one of his strengths, why you would say he's going to win easily, is he's very good at politics, very good at political games. His weakness probably is also that I think the perception, some public perception, is he plays a lot of political games, and they feel like they don't know what is going on behind the scenes. They don't necessarily trust him when he says, oh, I have no feelings about whether JEA, I have not stated a public opinion about whether publicly or privately whether JEA should be sold. Those kind of things I think people don't necessarily trust. So it's his political gamesmanship is both his strength and his weakness.
Mm-hmm. I think when it comes to transparency, you know, it's hard for someone to, it's easy for someone to throw that accusation, but it's hard to prove it with this administration simply because everybody totes the party line in this administration, from all of the directors, all of the, the management level folks. They're all on the same page with Curry for the most part. So they're not going to come out and throw anybody a bone when it comes to, you know, transparency issues.
Okay, we've got an elected official on the line. It's City Councilman Garrett Dennis, who had been speculated to run for mayor, but he's now filing to run for re-election in District 9. Councilman Dennis, good morning. Thanks for calling in. Go ahead.
I was just calling in, and, you know, I'm just listening, and just announced that I'm running for re-election, and I, you know, have 100% confidence that Anna Brochet will be our next mayor here in Jacksonville.
And why do you say that?
Because Mayor Lenny Curry has failed us. 3.5 years I've worked on city council, and I've seen the type of leadership that he's brought to the city. And it's totally time for a change. Things have gotten worse, and only a small chosen few has been benefiting from his leadership, and it's not right. It's time to restore all of Jacksonville.
Let me ask you, Councilman, you're probably the mayor's most prominent Democratic critic. There was some speculation you were going to file and run for mayor. Why did you decide not to do that and instead seek re-election to your council seat?
After you know, much consideration and talk with my constituents, my first and foremost responsibility is to, you know, the constituents of District 9. So so I decided to run for re-election. Also, to help restore checks and balance to the mayor's office, which for 3.5 years hasn't been that way. And so this opportunity for not just District 9, but you know, all 14, you know, 19 seats are up, so we, you know, we can elect people that you know, that understand that there is a checks and balances that that we need to hold whoever sits in the mayor's seat.
Okay, and quick follow up for you. A minute ago, somebody on the panel mentioned that Anna Brochet will certainly be challenged trying to win over Democratic voters since she is a Republican. How, if you believe she will win easily, she will certainly have to win a sizable chunk of Democratic voters. How do you see that happening? And also, any truth to the rumors that you've been working behind the scenes with Anna Brochet, perhaps on strategy about this race?
Well, I can tell you this. There, Mayor Lenny Curry has lost favor with the community. No one trusts the mayor. The mayor has, just recently, threatened some of the pillars, individuals in our community. And so I'll tell you, you go in barbershops, churches, beauty salons, restaurants, no one supports Mayor Curry. And it's evident. And
you're saying nobody in your district, nobody in the African-American community? Like, who are you saying?
Absolutely. Absolutely. African American community, Democratic community. There's no support for Mayor Curry. And, you know, get him on your show. Ask him to show you some of his internal polls. He will tell you that his.
OK, but you didn't. Let me ask you, though, just to get back to my question, not being enthusiastic about Curry is not the same as voting for another Republican. So what's and are you working with Ms. Brochet on that to try to find a way for her to garner crossover support?
Yes, I'm working with future Mayor Brochet in supporting or in getting support from the community. Absolutely.
Okay, that's City Councilman District 9 Garrett Dennis, who called in just now. All right, Councilman, thanks for that call. Thanks for being with us. Okay, guys, thoughts?
Well, not surprising that Garrett Dennis is going to be a big cheerleader for Anna Brochet. I think those two have really been sort of they've been the two sort of outliers on council in the last couple of months. They have been the ones who've stood up during council meetings, critiquing the administration, critiquing different parts of legislation that pops up. They both sit at the end of the dais. What is interesting, though, is I don't know if Garrett was going to be able to have a legitimate mayoral run. Mm-hmm. I think the only reason he would have gotten in was to muddy the waters a little bit and hopefully get Brochet to a May election runoff.
Fred.
Well, it's always interesting to be able to comment about how much less support the mayor has in the areas that you can see. But when you go around the district, as I'm sure also that internal polling will show, they really don't care about a lot of stuff that we're concerned with out in Baldwin and Deep Mandarin and at the beach And the
that's right. It's a citywide election.
The eastern section of Arlington, you're not going to find that discontent with the mayor.
You've got to win citywide. And so that's what makes this race so interesting and certainly requires a lot of money and political skill. I think it's why, as we've all been discussing, there's sure to be a lot of interesting moments. Lee is on the north side. Hi, Lee. How are you? Go ahead.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
Okay.
Good morning to your panel. Hey, I just wanted to call. I am a lifelong Democrat, and I was calling because I am in full support of Anna Brochet. I think it's time for the city to make a change, and I think she's the person to get it done. And we're also hearing on the north side about a possible run for mayor by Dr. Johnny Gaffney, also muddy the waters. And we're not going for it. We're Anna Brochet 100%. In fact, I might be going downtown today to switch my party affiliation.
And why is that? Why are you supporting her?
Because I believe that she has always been for diversity. She's proven that when she was the council president. And you saw what happened once she came out of office. everything kind of went backwards. And the mayor has been placating the people on the north side for too long. Tired of hearing about the Ken Knight Drive. That's not the only street on the north side.
Okay, that's Lee up on the north side. Thanks for that, Lee. All right.
You know, it's interesting because with Brochet in this race now as a Republican, you've got Jimmy Hill also running as a Republican. Curry's running as a Republican. There is an opening for a false flag candidate. The caller alluded to Johnny Gaffney, works for mayor,
right.
Residing and running. I don't get the impression that Johnny Gaffney is, based on my discussion with sources with personal knowledge of it. But I wouldn't be completely surprised if somebody like a Pat Lockettfelder or Don Gaffney or, you know, somebody from yesteryear, you know, filed just to get on the ballot, sort of like Warren Lee did 8 years ago, a sort of a ballot complication for Alvin Brown. Similar type of thing could happen. I'm watching it, but I don't think it's going to be Johnny Gaffney.
Just a point here. I think the caller mentioned he was going to possibly, you know, change his
which
party
you don't
affiliation.
Have to do, yeah, by the way, if you're still listening.
Yeah,
you don't have to do that. Linda is in Deerwood. Hey, Linda, go ahead.
Yes, I know you guys are, your job is to punditry, but let's not just totally make it seem like if anybody listened to the thing that nobody should bother to even investigate Anna Brochet. She is an alternative. We need that. Even if she doesn't win, we need an alternative, somebody to have a debate that brings issues up in terms of the mayor's weaknesses, to question about JEA, to question about the way he's handled things in the background. I am also a Democrat. I also will be voting for Anna Brochet. I will be working for her if she needs any help. So, Anna, I'll be looking at your website. So let's just give the city an opportunity to have a choice. Let's not just go all in like, oh, there's no need. You know, Lenny Curry's going to win. Yeah.
Okay, got it, Linda.
About Donald Trump too, right?
Thank you, Linda. Bye-bye. Thanks for that. Okay, one more call. Dan on the west side. Go ahead, Dan.
Hi. I'm a Democrat since I've registered about 5 years ago in high school. I'm 22 now. This is probably my fourth election. But I don't see myself voting for another Republican over a Republican. I'd rather have a Democrat that caters to my beliefs. And unfortunately, I don't really see it.
Sure. And there are some Democrats who filed to run. They're just not going to get a lot of backing or support because they're not very well funded.
Yeah, you're going to need more than $1,000 to run in this race, unfortunately. You know, for some of the callers, you hear some of the callers on the show now saying they're all going to support Anna. I think the media is going to treat both of these candidates, you know, the same as far as, you know, what are their strengths, what are their weaknesses. You know, I know that at least the folks on this panel are going to make sure that, you know, we cover these candidates equally.
Absolutely. As a previous caller mentioned, it's good for democracy to have a spirited debate on the issues, regardless of who wins, who has the victory in the end. And lots of tweets, emails coming in to the show. Here's one. I said before I'd ride in my cat before I'd vote for another Republican. but it looks like it's time for me to go through with it. I have two cats, and I'll go with the prettiest one. There are some interesting tweets
kind
coming
of
in.
Shaming there.
Yes, lots of humor coming into the show. But this is a serious election, so get to know the candidates and their positions before you cast your ballot. Also, this week, speaking of casting ballots, there will be some new voters in the March election this year in Jacksonville. Amendment 4 went into effect Tuesday. That means former felons can now register to vote. They're automatically able to vote once they complete their sentence without going through a long and cumbersome rights restoration process. We spoke with a few folks who showed up Tuesday to register. Take a listen.
It's only when I joined the Duval chapter, FRRC, and walked and petitioned with other people just like me, returning citizens, to get Amendment 4 passed, that this really happened for me. And I guess that's why I'm emotional about it, because I got out there and I knocked on doors and I asked people, you know. And it was amazing to me that a lot of people didn't vote, don't vote, and I asked them, do it for me.
Mark Woods, it was pretty emotional for these folks.
Right. I really enjoyed the story that Andrew Pantazzi wrote for the paper. He had some great details. He described, there was one, I think the man's name was Corey Moore, 42. He described him dressed up at the front of the line, there early, ready. You know, these were folks that had never voted in their life. And, you know, there's also the interesting detail, one thread, that often the reason they lost their right to vote was driving with suspended driver's licenses. We think of often as felonies, as, you know, there were things that were excluded from Amendment 4, mm-hmm. murder and sex offenses. But many of these people, that's why they lost their right to vote. And I think he interviewed somebody who was 56 and will vote for the first time in his life.
Right.
So it was very emotional, people getting choked up.
A big deal for civil rights, and it's been written about at the national level. Fred, AG, this is the biggest expansion of the franchise in this country since women gained the right to vote almost 100 years ago. We're talking about 1.4 million people now in Florida who will be able to vote that could not before.
Well, Governor DeSantis has sent essentially positive signals about this voter action. But the question still remains whether the legislature will do with this what they did with medical marijuana, try to bury it in some legalese or some legislation that will slow those supervisors of elections around the state from doing their duty. And that is following what the voters have mandated. That's going to be the key here. It's one thing for these folks to get down here and register, but as we all know, the registration has to pass through Tallahassee. And if mm-hmm. the new Secretary of State is going to slow walk this through in terms of getting regulations out to the county supervisor of elections, and someone in the legislature has a bee in their bonnet and doesn't want this to happen, then we're going to be back in the same boat as we were with medical marijuana.
You know, it wouldn't be the first time the state has slow rolled something an overwhelming majority of voters say they want. Yeah. So this would not be a new thing for Florida.
No, I mean, under Rick Scott, it was if they didn't like it, they'd study it to death.
Right.
You know, and Governor DeSantis, you know, during his, you know, inauguration period there, I mean, told the legislature, you know, you have all the power. So that sent a signal to them. But it's kind of nice for once to hear a story out of Florida about voting that's kind of positive. I mean, typically we're known for like messing up elections and having,
right.
you know, all sorts of like malarkey going on.
Nothing but horrible things. Yes. So, yes. So that is true. It's nice to see that. In a political question, could this expansion of voters affect elections on the margins in Duval or not?
Well, I mean, you saw a rush of registration statewide the first day. It's tapered off since. So we'll see. I mean, are we expecting an army of 1.4 million voters to swing elections in and of themselves? I'm not, personally. But we will see some movement around the margins. It could affect some races down the road. I don't know if it's going to affect 2019 mayor's race, but when we look at 2020, we'll see where the rubber hits the road with this, and they'll get the legislature time to work through or just got implementing legislation, whether it's actually a self-executing amendment as it was intended to be.
Lynn is in Atlantic Beach. Hi, Lynn. Go ahead. Hey, Lynn, you're on the air. Okay, give us a call back, Lynn. I think sometimes people don't realize they've been holding and they're right there in the queue. Let's talk about another topic. And by the way, the number to join us is 549-2937. Today marks day 21 of the partial government shutdown. Of course, the nation is at a stalemate over the president's insistence to fund a border wall at the southern border. And so today marks the first missed payday for many local federal workers as this standoff continues. This is on path to be the longest federal government shutdown in history if it keeps going. We're talking about 800,000 federal workers all over the country. I'm not sure what the number is locally, but I do want to take a minute before we talk about this to mention some local companies who are doing something really nice. They are offering support and even freebies to these furloughed federal workers. So write this down if you're a federal worker. The Florida Theater is offering free tickets to select shows. If you need to drown your sorrows with maybe go out and see a show to cheer yourself up, you can go do that for free at the Florida Theater if you show your government employee ID. The Float the Idea sensory deprivation tank business is offering two free float sessions to any federal worker to de-stress. That's Float the Idea on University Boulevard. Two free sessions. That's a lot of money, by the way. Those are not cheap. Community First Credit Union has announced a full package of relief for federal workers who will miss their first paychecks. EMD Now offering free telemedicine services for furloughed employees in Florida. And Jack's Federal Credit Union is offering 90 days of no auto loan payments and $100 cash back. So trying to ease the pain a little bit as this drags on. And I honestly don't know how many people we're talking about, although certainly the Coast Guard at Mayport, that's a critical group of employees that have been sidelined. And lots of other categories, people who own private businesses that deal with the government are also being affected.
I mean, Homeland Security is part of this furlough, I guess, this government shutdown. And what do you think of that? TSA, you've got the Coast Guard. These are, you know, the crucial employees that are guarding our borders, guarding, you know, access to planes. It's weird because I think the public now after 21 days has sort of grown accustomed to this. It's eerie. We think of a government shutdown. You would think this would be handled in the first 2 or 3 days. Yeah. We're now 3 weeks in and people have sort of just kind of accepted it, I think.
Which is unfortunate because it's proof that our government is not working well. Yeah.
It's one of those issues where it's almost like immigration. If you don't have a family member that doesn't have papers or can't get across, you're watching the news and says, oh, well, that's too bad. It's unfortunate. But wall doesn't bother me until you get ready to file your income tax. Unless you have a relative that's on food stamps and that's going to get in some deep trouble. Or you're one of those many retirees who have a secondary job in the federal government and that they took on after they retired from the military and all of a sudden find a paycheck in trouble. That's when it begins. That's when it comes home. But for the vast majority of Americans, they're just watching this on television and it's happening in the government. And, you know, we get into that other thing. You look at those lazy government workers. You know, they're just a bunch of lady. So what? You know, who cares? Well, this is the problem. We're all Americans here and we should all care about this. But it becomes, well, it's their problem, not mine.
We've embraced symbiosis with the federal government and now we are reaping the harvest of it. I mean, 21 days in the shutdown, there's no solution set because Donald Trump, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer can't figure out a way to move the wall money. And, you know, you're sitting here with a $22 trillion debt, you're sitting here with the obligations all over the world, and the government's not paying its bills. It's concerning. And for people who work for the federal government, a lot of them are going to be reconsidering their employment status right now because the safe harbor of federal employee no longer seems so safe. And, you know, you got to wonder what the rest of the world sees when they look at this. This is a mess.
Absolutely. It is. And of course, the root of the issue, of course, is President Trump trying to deliver on his campaign promise to his most devoted base supporters to build a wall on the southern border or a fence or whatever you want to call it. The facts are this. Overall, illegal immigration across the border is down. That said, there are still large numbers of migrants coming in, although many of them are presenting themselves for asylum. And so it's a complicated picture. What is important to note is that there really isn't a lot of support among Republicans in the Senate to fund a $5 billion border wall. And so I guess where the rubber meets the road is, as the shutdown drags on, will he lose more support in the Senate, which is still Republican controlled?
The problem is they don't have any real choice. I mean, they're going to have to take a vote through both houses. It has to be enough votes to override, because he would certainly veto anything they do. And that's outside of him taking the executive order. So everybody, this is the government we voted for. This is what you voted for. And no, neither one wants to back down and look bad about it.
Now let's take a couple more calls. Lynn is in Atlantic Beach. Hi, Lynn. You called a moment ago, I believe. Go ahead.
Yes, I just want you to know I'm for Anna Broche. I've gotten to know her. I think she'll be a great leader for our city.
Okay, thanks for that. We want to hear from Mayor Curry's supporters, too. Whoa. Leslie is downtown. Leslie, go ahead.
Hi. I am calling in attention to the fact of qualifications of one of the candidates. Terrence Freeman has applied to run for at-large District 1. And although he has astounded that he has, when questioned about whether he qualified as having lived long enough, 183 consecutive days prior to his qualification under the Jacksonville Charter 5.04, that is a fact question that has not been decided. And so the people and the press need to look at that to see whether or not he has actually resided in and been a qualified elector, of that district.
Okay. Yeah, and I got you. And that's a yes. There was a controversy over his residency, and that is being litigated. So, yes, thank you for that, Leslie. I appreciate that call. Robert is on the south side. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, I had a really depressing day yesterday. I happened to look up the Bajax Innovation Corridor. Of course, they're starting it out by tearing the exit off the Hart Bridge and going to dump you at the base of the stadium. So now you'll have to go down the streets and so forth to get to downtown. And I figured the reason they want that is because when everybody lets out of work downtown, they'll be coming back and, oh, I am so mad at this. I got to have a drink. Oh, they got bars here for me. Thank you. That's great.
Hey, Robert, all of myself and all of my coworkers are going to need drinks regularly when they start bringing down those ramps, because I don't know how we're going to get in and out of our building,
That's
frankly.
That's what I was looking at.
Thank you for that call, Robert. Yeah, we're not talking about that today, but yes, that is a story we're following. Okay, another important story that we want to mention, of course, Governor Ron DeSantis officially was inaugurated this week. He issued an executive order on algae right away, departing sharply from the Rick Scott administration on issues of water quality in Florida. And at the same time, there was some drama as Scott left the governor's mansion and DeSantis and his family moved in. There was a rival inaugural ball, a party in the governor's mansion that yeah. Rick Scott held after DeSantis moved in. Lots of tensions between these two men, and it all burst into public view this week. Certainly, both of them probably are hoping to perhaps run against each other in the future, maybe even for president. I don't know. But no love lost between these two men.
No, definitely not. And, you know, it was kind of under the surface in 2018. They did not co-campaign. They did not co-brand. They said nice things about each other, but it was an arm's length thing. But, you know, Rick Scott has governed until the last day of his administration, appointing people like Carlos Baruff to a Fish and Wildlife Board, a former comms people, chiefs of staff, cronies, all of them. And Ron DeSantis is going to walk those appointments back. Ron DeSantis is talking about walking back Rick Scott environmental policy. It could be a new day in Tallahassee. I mean, DeSantis talked about reform. Nobody believed him in the campaign trail. But the first few days look reformish.
Mark Woods, the water policy that DeSantis, the executive order that he's putting forth, markedly different from the Republican who held the governor's mansion for 8 years.
Right. It's fascinating that already that candidate DeSantis was one thing. You know, it was kind of Trump, Trump, Trump. It was this simplistic and not a lot of details, and felt like it would probably continue the Rick Scott path. A few days in, Governor DeSantis is already markedly different from Governor Scott. And that's probably one of the, you know, environmental issues. You know, right away you said we're going to have a chief of science. We're going to have a resiliency office. I don't think ever heard Governor Scott talk about resiliency, maybe until the last few months when he realized it was a campaign issue.
Yeah, certainly a very different rhetoric. At the same time, DeSantis is being criticized in some quarters for not, when he talks about these issues, talking about climate change and carbon emissions as a driving factor. So you can expect that to come up as well. David Cotton.
Yeah, with Ron DeSantis, a Republican, I find it, you know, not surprising that he's not going to acknowledge climate change. It's just not, you know, the Republican style right now. Back to Rick Scott's pettiness is what is being called across, you know, a lot of, you know, political, a lot of people in the political sphere saying it's pretty petty that Rick Scott is essentially forcing Republicans in Florida to choose between him or Ron DeSantis. Who's going to be the alpha in this state? And Rick Scott does not have a pattern of stepping back and letting other people steal his spotlight.
It's really extraordinary to see this holding a party in the governor's mansion after you've already moved out and. Bizarre. I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like this.
And an inaugural ball in D.C.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. In the midst of a government shutdown.
I mean, he left the inauguration to go to D.C. to get sworn in. I mean, that was a power move designed to target Ron DeSantis. The thing is, though, is Rick Scott, beyond his money, you know, he's not a very compelling politician. I mean, Ron DeSantis has a story, has a beautiful wife, has the, you know, Navy history, has the kids, has all of that. I mean, Ron DeSantis comes from central casting. Rick Scott strikes many people as Mr. Burns on The Simpsons or something like that. And I don't think 6 years in D.C. is going to make Rick Scott any more relatable to the average voter.
Z is in St. Johns County right now. Hi, Z. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. So my question actually is that you made a comment actually that Donald Trump is the cause, that Donald Trump's policy about building a wall is the cause for many of these problems. But what I would argue is that it's both Democrats and Republicans' non-interventionist policies within the Middle East that generated trillions of dollars of debt, increased terrorism, decreased the security of Israel that is a lot of the causes of problems of not just local elections, but many American issues as well. And I was wondering if you would agree with me on that, and if you thought that what you were saying with respect to Donald Trump's wall policy was hypocritical. Thank you very much.
Well, that's not what I don't think that's what was said, Z. I think what we said was is that the president, as yet, has been unable to get Congress to agree to fund the border wall. But I appreciate all of your sentiments and comments about the geopolitical situation we find ourselves in. We would keep talking about that, but we are almost to the break. So finally, it's our look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from the week. Luckily, there is never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now, guys. This is your favorite restaurant I know. Only in Florida does one Florida woman who is really craving some Outback Steakhouse take the whole hangry thing to a new level. And this actually made national news. Apparently, Deanna Seltzer of Lake Worth asked her parents to take her to Outback. They said no. She got very angry, flipped over the glass dining room table, broke it, destroyed other furniture in the home. And attacked mom and dad.
She's only 35 years old, too.
That's right. Now, Deanna was later arrested and charged with battery and assault. She could have saved herself a lot of trouble if she had just used Bite Squad. That's just my thinking on this.
Or move out.
I'm pretty sure that
or
you can...
move out.
Or move out. Fred, that's right. Fred, AG, Mark, and David, guys, thanks so much for being here. As always, you make this so much fun. Thank you, and have a great weekend.
Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Law Firm.
I'm Wayne Hogan. The Move Over Law protects police, fire, EMS, utility, and sanitation personnel by requiring drivers to move over and slow down for their vehicles.
Learn more at waynehogan.law.
Special Olympics Florida provides sports training, competition, and health services for children and adults with intellectual disabilities from January 2nd through the 13th. Floridians who visit Publix can help foster the dreams of these athletes. More at SpecialOlympicsFlorida.org.
The British Parliament votes on Theresa May's Brexit deal next week. The debate has gotten ugly, but there are some economic realities here.
Because it's not just the United Kingdom that needs the EU as a trading partner, but the EU needs the United Kingdom too.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Brexit deal or no deal, trade will go on. That is next time on Marketplace. Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Hi, this is Ira Flatto. Did you know that a marathon runner's heart is actually built differently from a weightlifter's? Why? Well, this week on Science Friday, we'll talk about how exercise conditions and shapes your heart, plus shining a new light on black holes and watching what they eat. It's all on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Friday at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Mike Pompeo spends the week in the Middle East mending fences and clearing up mixed signals. Turkey's message to America about standing by the Kurds, you've made a serious mistake. And Kim Jong-un's trip to China shows North Korea wants to play on a much bigger diplomatic field. The Friday News Roundup, next time on 1A.
Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, it's called Songbook Jacks, a network of female singer-songwriters, and they're hosting their Winter Songbook Showcase tonight at the Blue Jay Listening Room in Jacks Beach. Songbook Jacks creator Pamela Bernkrant is here, along with local performer Nikki Dawson. Hey, good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Morning.
Okay, in a moment, Pam, we'll talk about the background of Songbook Jacks, but first, Nikki Dawson, you have been on American Idol, you've been on The Voice. You just put out an album, so kudos on all of this.
Thank you so much.
What was it like to be on American Idol and The Voice?
Ooh, I would say The Voice was like my first experience. I was like, had no idea how reality TV worked at all, but it was super fun to just meet very people that are in the community that kind of know how to like help like gauge and grow your whole ability and talent. So that was super fun. And Idol was really fun. You just get excited to meet like, you know, famous people.
Who were your favorite famous people that you met?
I would have to say Harry Connick Jr. was like all-time favorite. Like I melted.
Sure. Okay, and so Pamela, this gives you an idea of the talent that you have that you're showcasing tonight. Nikki's just one of the songbirds, I guess you could call them.
Yes.
What's on the lineup tonight?
Well, we have Rachel Hillman, who is actually from Tallahassee. So we like to feature artists who are in Jacksonville, but also in surrounding areas too. She's kind of like a bluesy, soulful singer, really great guitarist. We have Jenny Reed, who is a Jacksonville local. She is a little bit more pop country singer-songwriter-esque type.
Nice. And you created this as a way to showcase female musical talent. How's that been going since you started this?
It's been amazing. We did not foresee the amount of support we would have. It was a gap that I felt like I saw in the community. And it was just very reassuring to see that once, you know, we put in the work and started to create it, that other people felt the same thing and really found value in it. So it's been going really well. A lot of support.
Nice. Now, Nikki, you have a new album out. You'll be singing some cuts off the new album tonight?
Yes, I will, actually. Yeah.
And tell us about the album.
The album is titled Giannis Killed Hera, which is like my, I have a little interest within Greek mythology and stuff. And within that title, it kind of captures the idea of the god Giannis, which is the god of transition and decisions, killing and ending, the goddess of love and marriage and stuff. So
okay, so we have a preview of tonight's Songbook Jacks Winter Showcase. It's Nikki Dawson singing Cocoon.
Yes.
Let's take a listen.
Made this jewel.
That's Nikki Dawson. Beautiful. Give yourself a round of applause.
Thank you.
That's Cocoon off Nikki Dawson's new album, Giannis Killed Hera. She's one of the amazingly talented people performing tonight at the Blue Jay Listening Room in Jacksonville Beach. It is Songbook Jacks, their winter songbook showcase. Doors open at 7. Show is at 8. Kudos to you both ladies, creator Pamela Bernkrant and local singer-songwriter Nikki Dawson. You may have seen her on American Idol, The Voice. You can see her tonight at the Blue Jay Listening Room. Have a great show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. That is our show. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Brady Corm is our director today. And don't miss our new statewide program, The Florida Roundup. It's today at noon. If you are listening to our rebroadcast, keep listening for music. We'll be back at 9 a.m. Monday. Have a great day.